Blog Talk Radio.
Like the sand through the hourglass of time, it's not some crummy soap opera. It's Scarycast. Good evening. And this is Dr. John, live from Myrtle Beach, South Carolina. Great to be here tonight, Big Show. We're really excited tonight, Big Show. Sounds like a wrestler. Okay. We're excited to be here and glad to have everyone. The roll call, please. First of all, Devin Tate from Hollywood, California. How are you doing, Devin, tonight?
I'm doing really great. Thank you. We're staying safe from all the fires out here, and we're getting ready to go on vacation tomorrow. I'm going to be going to Tokyo.
That's right, and next week you're calling in live from Tokyo, right?
As long as I can find out a way to make it work, yeah.
Okay, good. Well, I hope you will. We'll send all the vibes that we can, so that's great. Glad to have you with us. Our co-host tonight, my buddy, the Bigfoot explorer himself, Matthew Delph of Mountain Empire Cryptid Research Organization. Matt, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. I'm doing good. Glad to be on the show. How's everybody else?
Pretty good. I bet it's cold up there in Southwest Virginia, isn't it?
Yeah, it was snowing last night here. It got a lot of snow and ice.
Wow, that's amazing. Well, we're glad you made it through the snow, the wind, the ice, the freezing rain. Guys, you sound like the post office. So anyway, glad to have you here. And you're like the sand through the hourglass of time, I'm sure. So anyway, and now, for the man that gave us that way to introduce the show tonight, the one and only, one of the greatest wrestlers in the history that I know of, Papa Stro, the Maestro of Wrestling, who is also an actor, commentator, a consultant, and, of course, a great wrestler. Papa Stro, how are you doing tonight?
Oh, yeah, blessed to be here. And just to segue into your Sands Hour class theme, Out from a Sand Dune pops Omar Sharif. just kidding.
Is this Dr. Zhivago or something? I mean, come on.
Yeah, yeah. By the way, have a safe trip to Tokyo. Oh, gosh. You'll get to eat some real sushi. That's awesome.
Yeah, I can't wait.
Oh, it's amazing. Japan's
awesome.
All
I got to say is last time I went to Tokyo, it's like all they wanted to feed me was raw fish, and I'm sorry, I'm just some poor little boy from South Carolina, and I subsist on grits and fried eggs. So I mean, it was just the worst. There's only so much sushi I can eat, but Devin, I know you'll have a great time, and Papa Stro, you're right, sand through the hourglass of Tokyo, so it'll be good. Well, there's a dog barking. I guess we have company out here, but anyway, it's good to have everybody here with us. Yeah, and
Matt, be safe without the snow, brother.
Yeah, definitely.
Oh, heck yeah. Speaking of our friends, I spoke with the She Squatchers this week. They're doing great, and all of our buddies are doing very, very well. So it's glad to have you folks here tonight. I'm turning the tables on everybody. After Papa Stro and I talk a little bit about pop culture, then I'm turning the show over to Devin and Matt, and you guys, and Papa Stro, and you guys are going to interview me about the Mandela Effect, the scientific base. And then at the top of the hour, Jonathan is come on and talk about UFOs from a very interesting area in Nevada. So that's going to be really cool. So we're looking forward to that.
Yeah, I'll be the ogre to interview when he's talking to the rest of the nerds and the Revenge of the Nerds in Paradise, I think, where he was at the campfire and he's talking to them. He's like, what if cat means dog? Oh, that's heavy.
Oh, wow.
How's that class?
Wow. Exactly. It sure is. So anyway, Papa Stro, what's on your mind? You're our pop culture guy. What's going on in the world of movies, television, film, entertainment, and pop culture right now? What's important going on?
Well, you know, I'd be remiss to say if I think everyone's really feeling it at home with the passing of Stan Lee. This guy, I mean, he was part of everybody's childhood, and he meant so much to so many with his vision and imagination of all the superheroes and supervillains that we have today. And just we kind of vicariously lived in his world. And with all with it segueing into television and film and all the great personalities that he, you know, he brought before us. So, Stan Lee will always be one of the all-time best icons in the entertainment world.
Well, he was. I got to meet him when he came to Myrtle Beach about 2 years ago for a comic con here. I mean, what a nice guy. What a super nice guy. And it was a real privilege. And, you know, he was one of those folks that you just always knew he was going to be around. And then one day he was. So we miss you, Stan Lee. We're glad you were part of our lives and our culture. And what more can we say? Devin, I know you, being out there in Hollywood, I know Stan Lee really affected Hollywood, didn't he?
Yeah, for sure. I saw that they put flowers on his star on the Walk of Fame.
Well, if anyone ever deserved a star on the Walk of Fame, it certainly was him. Matt, you, I'm sure you're a comic book fan too, and I know that passing of Stan Lee, it changes everything. We're in a brave new world now, aren't we, Matt?
Yeah, we are. Yeah, I always kind of grew up into the horror comics more, but he definitely paved the way.
Well, he really did, and we were blessed to have him around. I remember on Facebook, I saw a comic someone put up. He was being interviewed by the Almighty, and the Almighty said, "You did a pretty good job at creating a couple of additional universes. Come on in." And I thought that was so funny. I liked the way they said it. It was just so appropriate. So yeah, rest in peace, Stan Lee, and come back and give us some great entertainment again, because we know a personality like you just can't stay away from us too long. So thanks a lot. Well, Papa Stro,
another icon that passed away, and not many of the younger viewers would know about it, but a lot of us longtime viewers and listeners would, is the great Roy Clark, who entertained us for a lot of years through his music and through the sitcom Hee Haw and all that. And I mean, he was just Mr. Entertainment, and he lived for entertainment.
Oh, he did. Roy Clark was such an icon. I remember seeing reruns of Hee Haw. They were so funny. He had a lot of folks that I got to meet when I was in the music industry in Nashville, especially one of the nicest ones was Minnie Pearl. And so it was sad to see him go, but he was part of our lives, whether you watched him on reruns or just exist as part of our pop culture world today. So we got to thank Roy Clark for everything he did. And I don't know that I have said it on a show, but I want to express condolences to family of Jay Seals, the son of Dan Seals, the great pop and country star who brought us the song Bop. And Jay's uncle, Uncle Jimmy Seals, was part of the legendary group Seals and Cross. Jay passed away last week, and it was quite a shock to me. It was expected, but it's never expected. So, another buddy of mine, and he was on Comic-Con Stars when we called the show that, and just such a great guy. And I think right now he still has a number one book out on Amazon.com about, I think, religious science fiction, and he's still number one, and we're proud of you, Jay. And we've had a lot of great people go, but we've got a lot of great people coming up. And Bob Stro, anybody else you want to recognize before we barrel into tonight's topic?
I want to say pay respects to the people we've lost, and you know, going forward, like you said, we're going to a brave new world of entertainment with the aftermath of, you know, Stan Lee and of the Roy Clarks of the world.
Yep.
And hopefully we, through what they've done, we can create more magic and more great stories and entertainment for everybody to enjoy.
Well, that's true, and I think all three of you really contribute to the for the great entertainment experience, Papa Stroh, through your acting and through your wrestling. Matt, through your adventures up there in the mountains looking for Bigfoot. And Devin, through the great things that you do in Hollywood, West Hollywood and Los Angeles, and the music that you create. I think we've got a great group here tonight. And thanks to every one of you being part of this brave new world. So it's about time. I'm turning over. As they say on The Outer Limits, you are relinquishing control of your television set. I am now relinquishing control of the Scary Cast and turning it over to Devin Tate, to Devin Matt.
Hello, thank you.
I'm done. You guys keep on.
No, thank you.
Well, I know we're talking about the Mandela Effect tonight, so I assume there's a reason why this topic is coming up tonight, and I thought maybe you could explain how you chose this topic and what it means to you.
Well, it means a lot to me, actually. I was introduced to it just surfing on the internet looking for paranormal things, and I saw it. And it was very interesting. It was something about the Berenstain Bears and their father and all that. I said, well, this is kind of interesting. I found it on Reddit. So looking in, and the website, MandelaEffect.com, says that the Mandela Effect is what happens when people have different memories of the past but are sure of them. And I said, well, that's interesting. I mean, how could that happen? So, of course, I went through and I looked around at all of the silly little trivial examples. And what's a trivial example? Like misnaming of something, the name of a product has changed. Oscar Mayer came instead of M-A-Y-E-R is M-E-Y-E-R. And, you know, those are interesting and people really go gaga about things like, wow, this is great. But that's not the whole point. The point of the Mandela Effect is to find out why in the heck is it going on. And that's what I'm interested in. Because so many people have these experiences. I know that when I was getting my doctorate at North Carolina State, I used to travel from Myrtle Beach to Raleigh, North Carolina. And the longest part of the drive was from Lumberton, North Carolina to Fayette. It's like I remember it being almost 6 miles, and I would always have to load up on coffee or something in Lumberton to make it to Fayetteville without going to sleep at the wheel. Or same thing in Fayetteville, I'd have to go load up on coffee or tea or something so I could get back to Lumberton and get back on Highway 74 to come back to Myrtle Beach. Well, I hadn't been to Raleigh in about 5 years. And so I said, well, I've got to go up there. I was going to work on Steampunk Mid-Atlantic. So I got in the car, got to Lumberton, and I said, oh, well, it's early this morning. I'll be fine. I never thought about it. Got to Raleigh, did my business, met with my buddy Anthony Dowling. We went around to see some folks, deliver some posters, deliver some VIP passes up there. And so I was coming back, and it was around dusk. And so I got to Fayetteville, and I said, oh, gosh, here comes the long haul. So I stopped off at the McDonald's there and got some coffee. Got back in the car. And about 25 minutes later, I was in Lumberton. And I said, now, you know, something's wrong here. Because this used to be the longest part of the drive. I said, well, you know, I did this for 3 years. I don't remember it incorrectly after 3 years, once or twice a week. I do not misremember it. There's a great word that we just coined, misremember. So I said, you know, something's got to be wrong here. But I didn't think much about it. And that was right before I had started looking into the Mandela. The next thing that happened is, and this was when I was selling life insurance, it was about 8 o'clock. And it happened to be June 23rd, right around the longest day of the year. And I said, well, I need to go see this lady. I was over there outside of Florence, South Carolina, where Papa Stroh and I will be tomorrow. I was outside of Florence. And I said, well, I need to go see Miss Starlinda because Miss Starlinda's insurance premium didn't go through the bank. So I need to take care of that. And then there's another lady I'd like to go see. And I know that as long as there's light in the sky, as long as the sun's up, I don't care about knocking on someone's door. Because here's how the story goes. I had a really great dad. And so when I was about 7 years old, this was before daylight savings time was standard throughout the country, my dad took me out on or about June 23rd. And he said, son, I got something to show you. We went out at about 9:30 that night. He said, all right, son, where's the sun? He called me son. Where is the sun in the sky? I said, well, it looks like it just set. And he said, so what time is it? And I looked at my watch. I had a brand new Timex watch, and I'd learned to tell time. I said, well, it's about a little after 9:25. He said, that's great, son. So we're going to stay out here. Let's play some more. Let's see how long it takes for the night sky to come in and for everything to get dark. So we did. We hung out. We played ball and whatever. And it was about 5 minutes after 10 Eastern time, no daylight savings time, when it finally got dark. I was fairly impressed at how late it was. So anyway, my dad came home. He said, son, we've got another lesson, and I'll bring it to you near Christmas. So it was a couple days before Christmas, and he arrived home at about 4 o'clock. And, of course, I ran outside. I said, Dad, is everything okay? He said, yeah, I want to finish what we started back in June. So he said, come on, sorry, let's go back into the backyard and get the ball. So we started throwing the ball. And a few minutes later, he said, all right, son, what time is it? And I said, well, it's 4:20. He said, where's the sun? I said, oh, my goodness, the sun has gone down. Dad, it's 3, 4, 5 hours earlier than it was in the summer. He said, that's right, son. I just taught you that days are shorter in the winter and they're longer in the summer. And I said, wow, I was impressed with that. Of course, like any self-respecting 8-year-old at the time, I thought, well, that's great, and I went on to go watch television. I think that's what a lot of 8-year-olds do. So it was, you know, I always remember, I'll never forget that. It was a wonderful experience with my dad. So then there I was, I went to see Mrs. Starland. It was about 8 o'clock. See that it wouldn't take 15, 20 minutes to see her. And then I would be able to come on back outside and go see one of her neighbors who had requested information about life insurance. So I came out. It was about 8:25. I said, well, it's, oh, my goodness, the sun just went down. I said, now what's going on here? So I rationalized it real quickly. I said, well, it must be daylight savings time. It must be that must be the effect. That's why the sun has gone down an hour early. But I got on home, and it was bothering me, and I finally got out a piece of paper, and I started diagramming the time and everything, and I realized that in the spring, we spring forward, which means if it's afternoon, well, actually, according to daylight savings time, it's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I realized that at 8:25, the sun had gone down. But actually, it was 7:25. And I got cold chills running up and down my spine. I said, well, now, something's wrong here. I mean, why hasn't this been all over the news? How can the sun be going down 2 hours earlier and no one noticed it? And I began to think I was a little crazy. So I worried about it for a couple of days, and then like any self-respecting person, I just kind of forgot it. I said, well, I guess I'm wrong, whatever. And that experience right there, when I saw the Mandela effect, it immediately clicked into me that I have very vivid experiences of the sun going down at about 9:30 Eastern time. Which would have been, it would have been 10:30 Eastern time, Eastern Standard, daylight savings time. So I said, now something's really wrong. And I saw the Mandela effect, and I realized that I had a very, very strong memory of something that happened that is not happening anymore. So I called up my aunt. My aunt's 85 years old. I said, aunt. I talked to her a little bit, did the old warm up. Then I said, let me ask you something. When you were a kid, did your dad take you out and show you about when the sun goes down in the summer versus the winter? She said, well, he sure did. And I said, well, what time did the sun used to go down at night in the summer? This was before daylight savings time. She said, well, it was about 9:30. I said, okay, great. That's all I wanted to know. I didn't care about anything else. So she gave me my 9:30 time frame, and I was happy with that. I knew that she had the same memory that I did. So I kind of polled some friends of mine, And I asked them, you know, what time does the sun go down? About half of them said it went down late, like around 9:30. Half of them said, well, it goes down around 7:30. Just saw that. So that was my first real experience with the Mandela effect. Now, if anyone's got any comments, you know, am I getting any comments about that story? Because I've got another story that was really a lot more shocking than that to me. You know, these trivial examples of Berenstain Bears versus Berenstain Bear and the Volkswagen logo being a little different, those are trivial examples. These the two examples I'm giving tonight, I think, are very important because they involve the world. So I'm going to go ahead and continue with my second example, then you can start firing some more questions at me. My second example is this. I was looking at the map, and I saw South America. South America looked kind of misplaced. In fact, South America is east of Miami. I said, no, that's not right. That can't be right at all. So the first thing I did was I went and bought a copy of Risk. We all remember Risk, the game?
Mm-hmm.
Do you remember Risk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Papa Stroh. Y'all remember Risk, don't you?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So here's what happened. Here's what happened. I went to Toys R Us back when it was open. I bought me a copy of Risk. And I saw the map of the Western Hemisphere. And I saw that South America was directly under North America, because that's the way I always remember it. And I also noticed Panama. I mean, first of all, the most important thing about Panama is that it hosts the Panama Canal. And I always remember Panama was a north-south oriented country, and the canal was always east-west because it connects the Pacific Ocean and the Atlantic Ocean, so you don't have to go around Cape Horn in South America. I mean, it certainly revolutionized shipping. And so I called my buddy Lee. Lee is in transportation logistics. He helps schedule planes, trains, automobiles, ships for shipping. And I said, Lee, you don't do much with South America anymore, do you? He said, no, not really. I said, well, tell me this. Didn't you tell me one time that South America, the west coast of South America, is in the Pacific zone? He said, yeah, it is, because it just made all the shipping a lot easier, and it was so close to being in the Pacific time zone, it always was. I said, get on your computer, and I want you to check something. I had him check a map of North and South America. He said, oh, John, that's not right. That can't possibly be right, because the western coast of South America is in Central Standard Time, and some of it's in mountains. He said, that's not right. He said, well, welcome to the brave new world. That's the Mandela effect. You and I have a distinct memory of a continent being shifted way west of where it is now. And so those are two, I think, world-class examples of Mandela effects, things that I remember differently. Does anybody else of our three panelists, do any of you remember South America being directly under North America?
I thought it was always shifted over also.
So you thought it was, so when you grew up, it was shifted over. Devin, how about you?
I don't remember having a specific memory of where it was. We went there a few years ago, and I was surprised how far east it is. Yeah.
You were surprised at how far east it is. Papa Stroh, how about you?
Well, I've always knew it was in the southern direction, somewhat either east or west of us. But it was like somewhat in the southern type direction of North America. At the same time, the Earth is constantly moving and shifting. And through earthquakes and tremors and all the natural phenomena that goes on with the Earth, it's always changing and moving around. I think people don't stop and realize that. And it's constantly evolving and moving around. And so, I mean, what may look like what we see on the globe now may be different like 10 years from now, and so forth. So, I mean, it's that you have to take that consideration.
Well, that's true, but it just stunned me. Panama is now north an east west oriented country, and the Panama Canal is oriented north south. So it looks like it really connects the Caribbean Sea with the Pacific Ocean. I mean, I'm just going by what I remember. So,
but things are a constant change in the universe, and with our world as well. So I mean, it's probably one of the most fascinating parts of our history, how things develop and change over the years, physically and so forth.
Yeah, that's very true. And I guess what it just really stunned me that there are a lot of things that I see today that I remember differently from when I was growing up. And I don't think I know I'm kind of crazy, but I don't think I'm that crazy. And it's just very strange that these things are happening. And the phrase Mandela effect started from the following story, and we assume this is true. There were two gals from different parts of the country rooming together at Dragon Con in 2010. And one started talking about the funeral of Nelson Mandela in the late 90s. And the other young lady said, well, now hold on a minute. Nelson Mandela is very much alive and recently won the Nobel Peace Prize. And she said, no, he didn't. So they got online and come to find out, yes, Nelson Mandela was still alive and he won the Nobel Peace Prize. However, this first young lady who was talking about him passing away in the late 1990s, she talked about how Nelson Mandela's wife had delivered part of the eulogy and talked about what a great man he was and how he had died in prison. Now, I remember him getting out of prison and winning the Nobel Peace Prize, but that's where the Mandela effect came, because a lot of folks started realizing after speaking with these two young ladies that there was some kind of a disconnect, that there was the fact that things seem to have changed and a certain portion of our population remembered things differently than there were. I mean, I got one other thing I'll say. I remember when I was selling life insurance about 6 years ago, I was in a lady's house and her TV was in her kitchen, and I remember hearing about the funeral of Dr. Billy Graham. And a question they asked his son, Dr. Franklin Graham, it was an ABC News correspondent, said, well, what are you going to do about the ministry now that your father's gone? He laughed, he said, oh, I've been managing the thing for years. We just let my dad preach because he loves it. You know, Billy Graham, for those of you that don't know, was the biggest and most popular stadium preacher. He would go to football stadiums and fill the place up and talk, deliver sermons, and a lot of people loved that. And I very well remember that comment about Dr. Billy Graham dying and even mentioning to the lady who was my host. But then, of course, at the point that I found out about that, well, then I found out that Dr. Billy Graham was 99 years old and living up in Montreat, North Carolina. And I was absolutely stunned because I remember when he passed away. I remember seeing it on television, seeing it on the newspapers and everywhere, but yet he was still alive. And that was another thing that really shocked me. I do have very vivid memories of him passing away much earlier than, last year. So that's the whole deal about the Mandela effect. And what I did was
Do you remember the scene in this Escape from the Planet of the Apes, where the doctor was explaining making an analogy to time portals, in which he said he showed a picture of an artist painting himself inside of a picture, who was painting himself inside of a picture, who was painting himself inside another picture, and it was just infinitely drawn out to where the point was that one little moment in time through a portal, one little minute, diverse part of a certain moment in time could affect the whole journey of the portal, more or less. So one little movement could change, like, the direction of everything.
Well, now, Papa Stroh, you're 100% right on that, because one small change can infinitely affect, and that's what I think I'm going to talk about next. I'm now going to move forward to 2011. And I had, when I was doing my doctorate at North Carolina State, I had very interested in working at the Ryan Research Institute. So I did that for 3 years. Dr. Sally Ryan Feather and all the fine folks that do paranormal, what we call paranormal research there. And it turns out Joe McMonagle, someone that I very much wanted to meet, he was my co-viewer. He was part of the Stargate project that CIA put on this as Stanford Research Institute, where they had hired psychics to take a look across enemy lines and see what the enemies were doing. Now, there's a lot of controversy about whether or not that was successful, but I personally think that it was. But I always had wanted to meet Joe. So I was a fundraiser. It was an annual anniversary banquet for the Ryan Research Institute, and they had a psychic comedian up there. He was a lot of fun, and someone raised their hand during that Q&A period and said, "All right, where did flight so and so from Malaysia end up?" That was big talk there because there was a flight from Malaysia that had just disappeared from thin air, and the comedian stood up there and laughed a little bit. And all of a sudden, I felt someone staring at me. But all of a sudden, in front of me, I saw a map of part of Asia. I just saw it in my head. And then I looked over, and there was a guy sitting there smiling at me. And I thought, wow. And then I realized, oh, my goodness, that is Joe McMonagle. That's the man I always wanted to meet. And so he was just smiling at me, and he winked, and he turned back, and we were watching the comedian again. I didn't know what to say. But I thought it was just amazing that there he was. I looked at Dr. Sally Ryan Feather, who I was sitting next to, and she, like, chuckled at me, and that was it. I'd never told her I wanted to meet Joe, but it had happened, and I spoke with him for a minute after the banquet went on to the hotel. And the next morning, Joe showed up when Sally and I and her husband Bill were having breakfast, and Bill went on to church, and so the three of us were talking. And Joe told me about a professor from Texas A&M that he had worked with named Dr. Ron O'Brien. They'd done some experiments on Joe's ability to do remote viewing, and he said, there's a paper. You really need to take a look at it. So what I did was I found a copy of it and read it, and it was very impressive. What I did was there were three examples of experiments Dr. Brian did with Joe. He actually ended up putting three questions into envelopes. And what Joe would do is he would sit and stare at the envelope at his house and answer the question and then write the answers down. So what happened was the questions were still in the envelope. They were sealed with wax on them. And so they invited Ronald Bryan back and Joe said, all right, here are my answers. The first question was, describe an electron. Now, Joe doesn't have any background in astrophysics or physics, so he should not have been able to describe in detail the way an electron acts and the wave function. And I'll get to the waves in a minute, number one. Number two, Dr. Brian had put a little bit of a radioactive element in the second envelope, and Joe described something that was emanating some type of vibration. It wasn't good. It wasn't healthy. And he described some other things about it. Dr. Brian was shocked. When, yes, that's exactly what it was. And so Joe had taken these three sealed envelopes and had accurately described the contents. And there were some fairly technical questions that Joe had addressed. He wasn't someone that had a lot of physics background. So Dr. Brian then turned to a very perplexing problem. In 1991, a particle was sensed by a radio telescope in Utah, and it was sensed it was going far beyond the speed of light. And it's not the first time that particles have been sensed by radio telescopes that go faster than the speed of light. But what do we know? We know that the speed of light is a constant, and it's 386,000 feet per second, and nothing can go faster than that according to Einstein, but maybe. So Ron Bryan asked Joe to concentrate on that particular incident and see what he thought. And here was his results. He said you know, that thing is just like it came from beyond, from another dimension higher than ours. It flew through space just for a moment or two, which was about a minute, and then it disappeared. And Joe had these words, another dimension. Well, Brian said, that means it could go much faster than the speed of light, and they estimated 6 times the speed of light. If it did that and it came from a higher dimensional realm, it then dropped down into some dimensions, because ours is called M4. We have, of course, the three-dimensional world, and we have time. So our dimension is called M4. And then what Dr. Brian, and if you look on Scarycast, scarycast.com, you'll see the picture that Dr. Brian drew of the way the dimensional model is set up, that we are in M4. Above us are universes that have more dimensions than ours. And then you have universes that have less or fewer dimensions than ours. But then right where ours are, we have parallel universes. What does the notion of a parallel universe mean? Because I know we've all heard that phrase. So
I'm going to take. It's funny you mentioned that, because and we also mentioned Stan Lee earlier on the podcast. Marvel has actually dabbled into possible parallel universes, in which they got a film actually, an animated film coming out December 14th called Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. I believe that's what it's called, and which they're talking about Into the Spider-Verse, and it's talking about how Spider-Man. There's alternate universes with different Spider-Mans, and they all actually somehow come together through portals. And so it's just an animated series, but it explores that issue that you were talking about with us having alternate universes and having different situations that are different. It's pretty much similar situations, but involved in different parallel universes.
Yeah. So really, what are they? How does this model work? Well, what I had to do was I had to find the research of Dr. Hugh Everett. He was a PhD from Princeton, and he had an interesting model, and it's called the multi-universe model, or the multi-world model. And here's how it goes. Yeah, we've all heard of Schrodinger's cat. Raise your hand for Schrodinger. The whole point is, you put a cat in a box, put a radioactive isotope in there. Well, the cat will either be alive or it won't be alive. And the theory, based on what they call the Copenhagen model, which is what a group of scientists agreed on in the mid-50s, they said that you don't know if the cat's alive or dead. It's both until you open the box. And then when the observer observes what happened, then you know what happened, and that's it. Well, it kind of makes sense. You know, did the cat die or did the cat not? Came up with a different idea. And this is the multi-universe or multi-world model. And this starts to explain the Mandela effect. And here's what happens. He says that when you open the box to see if the cat has died from radiation poisoning, it either has or it hasn't. If it has died, the universe split. And there's another universe. There's a universe where the cat died and you proceed to do whatever you do. There's also another universe that splits off from it where the cat's still alive. And you continue to do what you do. So that's a splitting of the universe based on the quantum idea of what happens. So one way, one universe happens, and then another universe kind of splits off. So that's how we have multiple universes and parallel universes. What he says is every action that happens, there's one or two, it either happens or it doesn't. It's not a percent chance that it happens. It's something either happens or it doesn't. And from that, there's a split. You're still alive in one, and you're still alive in the other. But you at your spirit knows which one you're in, and it keeps doing that. And that's where these multiple universes occur. So the best I can figure is, let's go back to my example of sun setting at 9:30. There's a lot of people that remember that, and they know the sun set late. There are a lot of people that know the sun set early. So we've all met up together. And I guess the majority win. The majority of the people know that the sun now sets early, sets at 8:30 Eastern Daylight Time, which is 7:30 Eastern Standard Time. And the majority of the people think that, so therefore all of us need to realize that's what happens now, whether we have different memories or not. So it's like we're all there at one point. We all, like, go away from each other. We do whatever, and then we come back together. People have different memories of the past, and basically those with the that agree the most, well, that's the way your life is at that point. And that's the whole deal about the Mandela effect. There are a lot of people remember Nelson Mandela dying in the late 90s, but a lot more people tend to remember him winning the Nobel Peace Prize years later. So that is the overwhelming abundance of evidence, the overwhelming number of observations. So the maximum number of observations wins. So the Mandela effect is not anything weird or strange. It's just kind of a byproduct of how our universe works and how reality, something happens or it doesn't happen. Now, I hope that wasn't too confusing, but the whole point is, it's like math. I'm gonna talk to you for a minute because you're a Bigfoot explorer, right?
Yes. Correct.
Okay. Now.
Yeah.
You tell me a story about when you were going out there when you were a kid. You were like 20, 21 years old in Indiana, and you felt
right.
like you came very close to a Bigfoot. Correct?
Right. Yeah.
Well, you're in the universe where you came close. There's a universe where you actually met Bigfoot. Now, I don't know if you got killed from Bigfoot or if you met him, shook hands, or whatever, but there is another universe where you did meet Bigfoot. We don't know what happened. What do you think about that? That's what Dr. Brian combined with Dr. Everett say is there are two actualities that happened. But you happen to be living in the actuality right now where you almost saw what was chasing you.
How does that come into effect? For example, okay, say I'm living in this reality now, and how does that cross over when those, it's kind of like Rob said, you're looking at the painting, the picture, kind of like the, like if you take a mirror and you look into a mirror with a mirror, you're looking in a mirror backwards into another mirror and you see all the little small mirrors and that's different parallels of the universe.
Here's the way Dr. Everett explained it. He said those two universes are completely different. They're mutually exclusive. So you don't know what happened in that other one, but it happened. And you don't know because you're contained in the universe where you almost saw that Bigfoot, where you almost saw that entity, but you didn't. So they're different, and you really don't have any memory of that, but it's out there. And there's a whole bunch of universes that have spawned off of that.
So are you saying that they're crossing paths? That's how we're getting these, what we remembered, and then we look back at it actually isn't. It's showing something else. Are you saying
other
that they crossed paths somewhere?
Yeah. In other words, other people have different memories. And
okay.
So... We happen to live in a universe where it's the Berenstain Bears now, where it used to be the Berenstain Bears. So, yeah, we live in a different universe because more people remember that than not, so that's the way it is. It's kind of silly, but it seems accurate in the idea that the universe is split off and they are different, but we have memories of them. We have memories of them. But our reality is different now. So that is the interpretation based on Ron Bryan, on Hugh Everett, of how their research in astrophysics kind of puts us on the Mandela effect. Now, if anybody who's listening, please send me an email, jwstamey@gmail.com. Let's talk about this. But I think it's very interesting, and it took me a long time. It took me about 10 years to find all these results and put them together. So we'll see what happens. And that's what we have about the Mandela effect. I'll later on, just another couple months, I'll have some more input, and we'll have another talk on it, and we'll see what everybody thinks. So that's where it is. So what do you guys think? Devin, you've been quiet.
Yeah, so it's really interesting. I think it first came to my attention with the whole Berenstain Bears thing, because my cousin had texted me and my siblings and, brought it to our attention, and he remembered it with the E spelling. So I've looked into it. I don't specifically remember. When he first asked me, I thought, yeah, it was spelled with an E, at the end. But I wouldn't bet my life on that. I wouldn't even bet money on it. I thought that's what it was. But, I was a kid. I was like 3 or 4 years old. So I'm not going to rely on that particular memory. But it was just interesting how many people remembered it one way versus, really not very many people remembered it the other way. But in fact, supposedly it was always the way that it is now. So it's just really interesting that so many people have a different memory. And then it's kind of the new season of Twin Peaks that aired a couple years ago now, or last year, the year before. Time just goes by. It actually dealt a lot with this topic of different realities, people remembering things differently or not remembering, at different dimensions, portals into other dimensions, people going through dimensions and coming out younger or older. So it really made me think about this. It's very interesting. I do think there is, other parallel universes, because it explains a lot of things that can't be explained otherwise.
Oh, he's right. I mean, Hollywood's been, telling us for years about portals and time travel. Look at Back to the Future, for example. I mean, look at Contact with Jodie Foster. Look at They Live with Roddy Piper. I mean, the list goes on. Look at Doctor Who. The series is still going on today about time travel. So, I mean, Hollywood and entertainment's always reminded us about the possibility of portals going through time and alternate universes.
True.
Yeah,
true.
Well, I'm going to interject that in terms of Doctor Who, the Peter Davison years, these stories that I remember from that time period, because that was the first time I saw Doctor Who, they don't seem to exist anymore. And I keep having this all the time, and I think I'm still capable of sound mind and sound body, and I keep finding things where stories change. And I think the more you think about it, the more you'll see it. But I frankly think this is a natural phenomenon, and we've been going through it for years. I think the internet has enabled us to publicize when things change, and we look at it critically. Well, everybody, would find something that's changed and then start talking about it. But as I told someone, I gave an example. If you live in, let's say you lived in Indiana in 1840, you didn't have a lot of people traveling through that. Okay, that was called the West. Then it became the Midwest. But you didn't have many people coming by. And you wouldn't have noticed if things changed. You wouldn't have. And you were there with your family in your small town, and pretty much everybody had the same exact experience. But today, those people, those people that little small town, are all doing it. They can all see different things. They can hear different things. And because of the communication of the internet, we can see where some things have changed. That's what I think is happening. Thank you, Internet, for doing what you've done and alerting us to the fact that things change and people have different experiences. So that's what I think about the Mandela effect. And if anyone's got any comments or whatever, just email me at jwstamey@gmail.com. It's fascinating. I think it's natural. here was the story that I wanted to close with. Answer this question honestly. You put your keys down. You messed around a little bit for 2 or 3 minutes. You come back, your keys are gone. You don't know where they are. Then you keep looking for them, looking for them. Then, you know, since you're not in a rush to leave, then you do something else. Then you come back, and there they are where you thought you'd left them. Have you ever? I want to go by individually and say, have any of you ever had an experience like that? You knew where something was, it wasn't there, and then it reappeared. Matt Dell, has that ever happened to you?
Yeah, it happened to me actually this morning. I had set my phone down, and I heard it go off, and I went over and I was looking for it right where I set it down, and then I went and done some other things, and then I come right back, and it's sitting right there in front of my face, right where I was looking. But I didn't see after I got done.
Yeah, its disappearance could be the fact that you slipped a little bit into a parallel universe and came back, and it wasn't there, and then you came back, and there it was. You know, supporting my hypothesis now, you know, obviously this is not a scientific survey, but Papa Stroh, have you ever put something down, wasn't there, and came back, and it was there? Has that ever happened to you?
Oh, countless times. And part of the time was because someone took it, but other times, you know, it was just subconsciously, I wasn't even like thinking that it was there all along. I was, it was just like either I was like half asleep or like not fully awakened. But yeah, it's weird like that, how that happens. It's like, It disappears and then all of a sudden like reappears again, like, you know, it's pretty crazy.
Yeah. Devin, have you ever had that experience?
Yeah, I definitely have. And then I think even on a larger scale, like, I'm sure other people have experienced this, where you are in a place or you're at a house or a neighborhood that you've been in many times before, but somehow things seem moved around slightly. I just experienced that a lot recently because I went back to my hometown. I hadn't been there for about 10 years. And it's just funny how most everything seems the same, but then there's every once in a while there's something that just doesn't seem right at all. It seems like totally got moved somehow, but logically you don't think it could have, but it just, you remember it being a completely different geography.
Sir, I have had that happen so many times. It's not even funny. I went to Kingsport once. Papa Stroh, you were up there at the Tennessee Bigfoot Conference with us, I was up there in Kingsport a couple of days before you were, and I remember when I would get off to Meadowview Parkway, but it wasn't there anymore, and I had to keep going about 5 or 6 miles. Come to find out, Meadowview Parkway exit was almost back up into the mountains, and I was on the phone with Cody, who's my business partner at Carolina Characters, and I'm trying to figure out where I'm doing, and I'm trying to talk to him about an issue in Myrtle Beach. And I said, Cody, there's something wrong. Since I was here last year, this has changed, and I know it's changed. And then I drove by a very thriving, busy hotel. It was a local hotel. It was kind of cool. It was an old Howard Johnson. I said, this is crazy. It's wonderful that they're still going strong. Well, I finally drove by there, and the place looked like it had been abandoned 20 years ago. It was unbelievable. So, I mean, you know, Devin, I know exactly what you mean. It's like things had really, really changed. I didn't know how to explain it. It would be crazy sounding, but, yeah, it was, I mean, that had to be, in my opinion, an instance of the Mandela effect. I'm going to tell you, speaking of, you know, I've kind of hedged a little bit about proof. Everything, we know what we think. I was watching some videos of Neil deGrasse Tyson. I don't know who he is. He's the Hollywood self-styled PhD in physics, in astrophysics. He's a really smart man, but he really believes in what he believes. And he keeps talking about, well, we have all these phenomena, but we can't prove them. And one of the interviewers said, well, we can't prove them. So many people say that they're real. He said, well, scientifically, you can't prove them. Well, what he's saying is there's no scientific method. It's composed of 5 steps. And according to him and other scientists, if you can't meet those 5 criteria, then you don't have anything that can be proven, and you shouldn't be talking about it. Well, I can tell you, Niels, that there are billions of people who believe in religion, and you can't really have a formal proof with examples. He says, just even if you have a million people telling you something, that doesn't constitute any kind of proof. And that's where I think science lets us down. Science congratulates itself for requesting information that everybody can see and that you must be able to repeat and get the same results from an experiment. When you look at even spirituality, I mean, you can't prove it. You know, there are a lot of people that believe in God, that believe in Buddha, that believe in Muhammad, that believe in many, many deities. But you can't physically, you know, prove anything, but there are so many people that believe in it, know that they're real. Well, my goodness. You know, just because science can't prove it doesn't mean that they're wrong. And that's what I don't like about science is they want you to have a repeatable experiment, but some things can't be repeated. So that's kind of what I think. And I'm not trying to be a bad guy, but I think, Neil, you need to learn. You need to realize that not everything is scientifically based, because if it were, then we would be able to recreate the entire world, and we could do that. So, all right, I'll stop fussing about Neil deGrasse Tyson. He's a smart man, but I kind of get a little frustrated with him and his overabundance of logic that doesn't really quite make sense. It requires more proof than we really have. But, yeah, I still believe everybody that believes in a deity, I still believe that they believe. And I don't think you can – call them to task and say that all their millions of accounts aren't legitimate. So, there we go. So I guess as we move forward from the Mandela Effect Part 1, does anybody, you know, look, any parting thoughts? Someone will be the bad guy. As the non-host, I'm going to put Devin, I'm going to start with you. What are your last words about Mandela?
Yeah. You know, I had to think of some, but I do think I used to always, and I still do, get like really strong deja vu sometimes. And yep. I think that that could have something to do with this, you know, like when you, I think in addition to like different dimensions and parallel universes, I think there's kind of also like time loops where you might do something over and over again before you get to move on, but you don't necessarily have the memory of doing it over and over again. You just remember the last time. But then sometimes there's an artifact of that. That might be where deja vu comes from, where you might have done something already. Somehow it happened out of time. You know, chronologically it was an anachronism where it maybe happened before it was supposed to. And so then you don't remember it, but you just have a vague recollection of it when you're in that same spot again later.
Deja vu. Because I've had a couple of experiences in the last few weeks. And the same thing. It's like deja vu was so strong. I never had it so strong. And then I spoke with the person, and we'd never met or whatever. They even had the same recollection that I did. So it was kind of interesting. So there's a parallel universe experience for you, Papa Strode. What do you think? How would you close this segment of TheoryCast about the Mandela Effect?
Consciously, subconsciously, what we see in the world, what little we know is out there in the universe and beyond, spiritually, mentally, physically, more and more evidence shows every day that everything that we know that's living, that's being, that exists, everything is intertwined together. And it's just every day and night just shows more and more how everything is all connected in our life. So connection's everything.
You're right. You're 100% right. That does have a lot of explanation for the Mandela Effect. Thank you very much for that. Matthew Dell, how would you like this chapter in Scary Cat?
Well, with the whole the whole universes and stuff and they're passing through. I think a lot of it's got to do with energy, because her body has got so much energy. And I think a lot of it is like, if it has happened, that's how a lot of these people can, you ever get a sense of the future? Maybe it's already happened. Maybe that you cross that parallel. I think a lot of people that can predict the future, they get that sixth sense. I think a lot of that probably coming from this, like you guys said, the Mandela effect. I think that if you can project the future, it's because you've already been there. You've already been in that universe. I think a lot of that's intertwined, and it's just the energy. I mean, you know how a lot of people say, well, you okay, I can, they get that sixth sense, I'm going to have, and they feel like, okay, I got a hunch, I need to do this, or I need to do that. I think a lot of that is probably from this Mandela effect. I think a lot of it is intertwined, like you guys said, and a lot of it's got to do with everything looping together, but it's happened over and over, and we keep going through these time periods. But where we know right now, where we're present, is what we know, but it's already happened somewhere else, but it intertwines with it. It crossed paths over and over. You know what do you get what I'm getting at?
Absolutely. Well, Devin said the same thing. He talked about loops that repeat. I mean, it sounds like Groundhog Day to me.
Yep.
And I think there's evidence that that's out there. But, you know, just because events split, the multiple worlds theory, I mean, doesn't mean that they can't repeat. It doesn't mean they can't loop back around. Nobody said they can't. So I think that's a very wise and very interesting thing to say. So look, I appreciate it. I've got three smart co-hosts tonight, and they know what time it is. And I like hearing what people have to say, because I've said about all I can about the Mandela effect, but I hope everybody's enjoyed it and everything. Now, Devin, do we have another guest tonight, or is that guest going to join us another time?
I believe so. Is he on the phone?
Now, I don't see him. I don't see him.
Well,
let me check it. Okay. Ah, yeah.
Hmm.
There he is.
Oh.
I just, hold on, we're going to pull him up. All right, Austin, are you here with us?
I am here with you all.
Yay, there you are.
Yep, I was like,
I'm going to turn it over to you, Devin.
All right, well, so we're speaking now with Jonathan Burkhead, and I'm just going to have Jonathan tell us a little bit about himself and then the reason why he's on the call tonight. It kind of ties in a little bit with the notion of parallel universes, because a lot of people think that there are visitors that have come to our planet from another planet, but some people think they're visitors that have come here from another dimension. So either way, I think Jonathan has some interesting perspective on possible visitors to our planet that have come to the Nevada desert.
Absolutely, I do. Well, first of all, hi, my name is Jonathan, and it's really great to be on the show tonight. Thank you so much for having me, first of all. So I think I would just like to kind of just jump into what I experienced. Just to kind of just give you just a little slight synopsis before I go into it. The funny thing about what intrigues me about extraterrestrial life, it actually stemmed from a fear. Basically, you know, as anybody, you know, my first knowledge of aliens or extraterrestrial life or however you want to label them, I think that it stemmed just from, you know, watching science fiction movies and just having a science fiction perspective of it. But I do recall when I was 12, I watched this documentary. I think it was either on TLC or the History Channel. It was one of those channels. And I do recall just being really freaked out because it was the first time I was really introduced to the whole reality of it. If it depends, like, you know, how skeptical someone is of it, whether they were to label it cryptozoology or whether they were to label it a reality. But that's just kind of where my fascination stemmed from it. And that same around that same time, I was watching this top 10 show, and one of them was the extra, and it was a top 10 like most haunted places or weirdest places in the world. And I think the number 8 position was the Extraterrestrial Highway, located in Nevada, about 100 miles north of Las Vegas. And I don't know, just even watching that documentary, it really gravitated me toward that whole concept. And I never thought that I would really go there. You know, when I first watched this documentary, I was living in South Florida and I was pretty isolated. I didn't really travel as much, you know. I mean, I was 12, so obviously I didn't travel much individually. So I just put, you know, that notion of going there on the back burner. But now that I've been in California the last 3 years, it's a lot more accessible than it used to be. So when my friends came and visited me from Florida, and he went to Vegas, he was going to visit Vegas for a work vacation, and he invited me to come down because I was going to have free room and board. So I was like, oh, absolutely. And so that way I could, you know, definitely, you know, get on board with the Extraterrestrial Highway. And just to let you know, my friend Darren, he is a very, you know, he's just one of those very typical kind of logical minded kind of guys. You know, he, you know, definitely doesn't believe in any cryptozoology. He doesn't believe in anything extraterrestrial or anything in that regard. But nonetheless, he's a very good friend, very accommodating. So he did agree to go on this venture with me. So, because the first thing I did when I got to Vegas, I told him, I was like, the first thing I want to do, I want to go to Extraterrestrial Highway, because I have zero desire to go to Las Vegas. I just wanted to, you know, go straight into Extraterrestrial Highway. Now, when we were heading up there, of course, I was very excited. So with that excitement came that preconception that I had a lot of wishful thinking that I was going to see something that I wanted to see. That was, you know, that was definitely going through my mind. When we got to the entrance of the highway, there was this little shack on the side of the road. And it was, you know, there was definitely, you know, a slight touristy area, but it was very unique. It had this, there was this sign that said, from E.T. It was E.T. phone home, but it said it was E.T. Eat jerky. I think that's what the sign said. It was this little painting. It was very strange. It was like, it was very comedic. It was obviously like quite intentional, but we went into the shop, and this very gregarious guy was working there. He was this huge Iowa State fan. Out of all places, like, you know, that was, he was just very adamant about that team, but he, you know, he was very, very warm and welcoming. And of course, you know, my friend, I tried to pry information out of him immediately. You know, that's just kind of how I was, you know, I was just like, okay, well, you know, you've been working here for a long time. You've had to experience something. The thing is, he still maintained positive energy, but he was very esoteric. Like he wasn't necessarily resistant or hesitant or like, you know, came off as a weird vibe, but he definitely had something to say. But his brother actually worked at the Area 51 base. And, you know, he told me, he goes, the only thing I can tell you, it's underground. That's all I can tell you. And I was just like, okay. But he was a very nice guy. Mm-hmm. So like, nonetheless, he was a nice guy. So, you know, the thing was, what had happened, though, when we entered the highway, not before we entered the highway, but right when we entered it, my friend just, like, sparked up. Like, he was just, like, he was so excited. He goes, I am so stoked about this. This is just, like, he went from being completely indifferent to it just to being completely psyched about it. And just, like, how illuminating he was when we entered the highway. Like, just how illuminating he was. It was just uncanny. It really was. And when I was driving into it, like, I just felt this, like, comfort. Like, I just felt this kind of solace, kind of this homey kind of feeling. Like, I really felt like, you know, I was home. Like, I felt like, you know, there was just something very mystical. Like, you know, something, I don't want to use the word religious, because that'd just be a little ridiculous. But it was similar. It was like a similar kind of, you know, experience. It was almost like I had a religious experience going through this highway. And even with my strong preconception, I still felt this, like, sort of longing, this sort of, you know, very bizarre thing. Like, I've been to paranormal places in my life. I've been to, you know, places where atrocities are committed, like all these things that would basically create a certain energy. Never before anywhere on this planet that I've been so far did I have this feeling. And the thing is, the first thing we were going to do, we were going to go to Area 51 first because it was furthest away. So when you're going on extraterrestrial highway, you're going about 40 miles. You go about 60 miles north from Las Vegas on Highway 15. And then you merge off on this highway, I think it's Highway 93. You stay on 93 for about, I think, about 30 miles. So like 30 miles on 15 and 30 miles on 93, roughly. So you have 40 miles on this extraterrestrial highway until you reach Area 51 in the nearest town, which is called Rachel, Nevada. Mm-hmm. And we were going to go to Rachel, Nevada after going to Area 51. The day was getting really short, and we were going to be in a valley. So the day was going to end around 4:30. And I just didn't want to be in 29 degree weather and the clothes I was wearing. And also there's open range cattle everywhere. So you can like pretty much hit a cow, like driving down the road. So like, you know, not a good day, not a good time, you know, definitely not a good idea.
Kind of like Will Ferrell did in that movie.
Pretty much. No, pretty much. I mean, like, there's like, that's precisely what it is. But like the thing was, when I got to reach Nevada, we decided to stop there first instead because we just couldn't find the road. We couldn't find the front entrance to the area, to Area 51. But I'll tell you something. I've growing up in Kansas, especially, I've been to a lot of small towns, and you know, well, every state I've been in, I've been to small towns. And the thing is, a lot of people are just not aware that every small town has a different energy to it. And the thing about this town, it's like when you go there, you really like literally you cannot think about one other thing that could possibly exist here. The only thing you can, even with the tourism, you just look at this town and you're like, there's no fucking way that anyone but aliens could live in this town. Like, there's just no way. Like, this is no matter how logically
I know what you mean. I've been to a few towns like that.
You really can. You just really can. And we go into this diner. It's a very popular diner for tourists. For some reason, like, we were misled by the other gift shop owners on the way there, and they told us we could get a milkshake there. And the people at the diner were like, oh, that's a lie. You can't get a milkshake here. Like, why the hell would they lie about that? But they're like, whatever. And this guy gets out a Glock. He has a fucking Glock in his hand. Hands it to his child. So he hands his fucking gun to this child. And I've been to a lot of redneck towns and everything like that. And,
right.
And that was something special. And so we asked him, like, so since we were there, we saw the diner, we saw the town. Like, it's like a town of like 11 trailers in a diner. That's pretty much what the town is, in the middle of the desert.
Sounds like a little manor. Oh wow.
Yeah, it's out there, and so we're desolate, like, you know, just like.
I wonder if Uncle Eddie
from
Vacation lives there. Randy Quaid.
Randy Quaid.
Yeah,
funny you mentioned Vacation. Vegas Vacation, because I watched it before I went to Vegas. I was like, oh, what the fuck? I may as well, you know, just get used to the scenery out there. So
yes.
I'll check the scenery out.
Yeah.
Oh god.
Awesome.
Well, the guy. So I'll tell you, the Glock guy. He gave us the directions to the road we go down, and that's the road where there's a black mailbox supposed to be by there. It's been vandalized a ton of times. Since there, so it's not black anymore, unfortunately, because, you know, people suck and they ruin everything for everybody. We got to the road, and it's 15 miles down this dirt road. Granted, my little car can't necessarily handle that sort of terrain, but I remember, because, like, I was going to do it, like, I was pretty relentless, and I was going to do it anyway, because it's been a lifelong dream, but I remember I stopped, and I'm all like, Darren, we don't need to go to Area 51. It's a fucking distraction. Everything is in that town. This town is everything you need. You don't need anything. You don't need to go to Area 51. You really don't. Because the thing is, the thing that really made me believe and just really convinced me that this shit is real is in that town. Like, the thing is, like, as much wishful thinking as I had, that strong preconception I had, it was in this town. It was this damn town. And that's just what I think it. That's just what I think it is. I think that what happens is either you have this, you know, strong sense of like either a paranormal presence or an extraterrestrial presence, you know, your entire life, and it's either and you have to go to a place like either a hot spot or something that's either going to convince you that it's real, or you're just going to realize you've been crazy all along. And never before have I been more enlightened than going to this town. And it's a crazy fucking place. Like, you know, there's nothing else really inspirational about it. But it was the energy there. And I could just sense it all around me. And that's why I just think that, you know, Area 51, it's always been a bogus thing. But I'll tell you something. Rachel Nevada, that's what's legit. And so that's why I recommend if you are in any way an extraterrestrial enthusiast, I recommend going to that town. It's just, it's something, you know, I wish that I could even put it into better words. But it's really an abstract thing. It's just an energy you feel, and for me, it's an enlightened, homey feeling that just came over me, and that's how I knew that this shit is real.
Now, since you were there, and I'm sure there's like a lot of they capitalize on the tourist aspect of it, but are there still a lot of, you know, UFO sightings or alien encounters, or did they take place in a certain time period? How did it kind of become known as the extraterrestrial highway?
I mean, definitely I think that, you know, I think in a mainstream perspective, it would definitely be the presence of Area 51. But when it comes to a local perspective, it would just definitely be their everyday life. I mean, the owner of that diner, she's had extraterrestrial visitors for years. Just coming ever since I think the town is still was actually still relatively new. It was I think it was even founded in the 70s. It is a relatively new place. But she had been getting visitors just ever since. They'd just be coming in casually. Like, it was almost like the society was integrated already. And, like, it's just, I guess it's, if you think about it, I think that even the most logical reasoning is that, you know, just maybe that's the place where aliens are just treated like everyday people. Maybe there's no prejudice. Maybe there's no fascination with them. They just believe that they're just simply one of us, and they're just simply another living being that's just coming in and existing with them. And that's just why I think it's just all a coexistence thing when it comes to that town. So there's really no time frame when it comes to sightings. It's not even about spaceships. There's photos of UFOs that are decked like all amongst the walls there, but for them, it's actually face-to-face encounters with the beings themselves, not the UFOs, the actual beings.
Oh, wow. Interesting.
Mm.
Yeah. And so that's basically, you know, what it is. And I swear to God, but the one diner chick there, if she's not an alien or a praying mantis or something, I don't really know what it is. So, you know, it was a surreal experience. And I guarantee if you go with a friend or something like that, like, you know, you'll be equally convinced. I can just I put my life on.
Hope it's not the lady from V, man. She'll bite your head off, man.
Oh, she certainly will. And then you're gonna give birth to that, you know, evil lizard child and everything like that. So
lizard,
just beware. Yeah.
Right.
It's like could you imagine I was like, well, one thing I can't imagine having a uterus, but, you know, I can't imagine a lizard breaking through that thing. That'd be, oh my fucking God, that'd be god awful. So, you know.
Right.
Because like alien reproduction is the whole thing. Well, you know, they based the alien movies off. You know, it was all a feminist movie, and it was all about either both sexual repression and also the agony of pregnancy, the agony of being a female. Like, you know, it's all about that. So there's definitely a connection to, you know, aliens and the female reproductive cycle. Very much so.
It's just like Bill Murray said in The World of the Psychics, that everything could be just like one big lizard.
or it's almost like, you know, that movie with John Carpenter directed, They Live. Like,
yes.
Like, I was like, are all the elites these weird, like, instead of being lizard, but all these weird zombie skeleton things that are only seen by a really badass pair of glasses. Like that's
yeah.
What it
Jonathan,
is.
Yeah. We, Jonathan, we
I need to get a pair of those.
The Piper so well. I mean, all the time. I'm so three cheers to you for knowing they live. That's awesome.
Oh, dude, John Carpenter. I mean, things like, well, A, Halloween's my favorite movie. So the thing is, if I'm not going to respect my favorite movie as director's other work, like, you know, that's just atrocity. And plus, you know, hey, the thing is, you just don't get more badass of an actor than Roddy Piper. Hulk Hogan can't act his way out of a nutsack, but Roddy Piper's got it down, okay? He's got it down. He's got it.
Oh, man.
So you can guarantee that. So that, no, props, and you know, props to you guys. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, and just on a side note, you know, like, the thing is, like, props to you, A, for knowing Devin, because, like, you know, he's an inspiration, and his knowledge and his quirkiness and his, you know, idiosyncratic ways are freaking phenomenal. So, you know, props to you on that level as well.
Thanks, Tom.
Oh, my God.
Of course.
Hey, Devin, where do you find these people? You find the best people in the world. Good Lord.
Boy, thank you. I just am kind of drawn to them, and they're drawn to me. So it just kind of works out that way.
Well, I mean, listen, in 2 weeks we've got Jen Cruz with the Chief Watchers. So we've got the version of who's spring and Bobby Power and so Matt. Thank you so much, Jonathan. Thank you so much. You've been a great relief from the boring, droning Dr. John talking about the Mandela effect. It's been great. So I know, Papa.
Well, I know,
Papa. So I'm going to get yelled at tomorrow. Yes, Jonathan, you were speaking. I'm sorry.
Oh no, totally fine. I was just saying, you know, I really appreciate you having me on the program because, you know, this is. And I appreciate you letting me rant on about that because, like, it's a very, like, honestly, like, even as exciting as the story is, it's a difficult one to say because it's just one of those things that's, you know, it's explanatory to an extent, but, you know, there's just, it's just, you know, it's like, you know, you're trying to describe emotions, you're trying to describe spirituality. It's way too complex to put into words sometimes. And so, you know, I appreciate y'all. Bring me on the show, and of course, you know, you guys are awesome, and I'll play
you
something,
awesome.
You know.
I hope, like,
the weirdos like myself, the nerds like myself, all those people, like, I hope that one day we just fucking rule this world, for Christ's sakes.
Absolutely.
We already do that.
The world needs us.
It's cool now, man. It's cool now. But anyway, thank you guys so much. I appreciate it. You guys were awesome.
Thank you.
All right. You guys have a good night.
Well, and Jonathan, you have some pictures from your trip. If people want to see pictures from your trip to Rachel, Nevada, where can they see them?
Oh, you know what? Funny you ask. Okay, so if you find me as JB Wanderlust on Instagram, you can check out the pics. There's a pic with me, what I call the tall man. No relation to the movie Phantasm, but there is me with a tall man there. You'll
love
see a photo
movie.
There.
Oh, my God.
And
I want to grow up and be just like him. Really.
The tall man's awesome, man. He got, like, things like, it's all about the tall man. He says everything. I mean, just like, and if you listen, if you're fans of Ween at all, if you listen to Ween, the Blast Man's pretty cool, too. So you got to check out the Blast Man. But,
nice.
But, you can check me on JB Wanderlust, and if you can't find me as JB Wanderlust, just look me up. Jonathan Benjamin is the name there, so you should be able to find me either way. But definitely check out the pics, man.
Hey,
cool,
Jonathan,
thank you.
I'm gonna get up with you and maybe help Scary Cat. Can I get up with you on that?
Oh yeah, totally, man. Seriously. By the way, I'm sorry you cut out a little bit right there. I apologize. I didn't hear a little bit of that. Hello, you guys there?
Can you hear me?
No, I'm here.
John,
is he here?
Yes. Yeah. What did you say?
There he is.
Oh, this is Dr. John saying I'll get up to you about some of your.
Oh yeah, totally. And seriously, check it out and everything. And you know, and just Devin, just, you know, relay if you Devin needs to relay me a few things, you know, definitely, you know, send it my way. All right.
For sure.
Good.
All right,
well,
you guys take it easy, okay?
All right.
You too, Jonathan.
Thanks to everybody. Just
just wonderful, wonderful. I'm going to start with, all right, Matthew Dell, what do you have to say in saying goodbye tonight?
Well, everything in the world ain't what you're actually looking at. You got to keep an open mind. There's more to it than what you're actually seeing.
Wonderful, wonderful. What do you have to
say? Hello?
Hello?
Hello, Papa Joe. What do you have to say in saying goodbye tonight?
Oh, well, be good to yourselves and each other. The world is going to be what it is, but do what you can to make your world a better place for yourselves and everyone around your world. And I'll be joining you, Dr. John, this weekend, tomorrow on Sunday in Florence, South Carolina for the Jingle Bell Market. Looking forward to that. And
oh, yeah.
You guys take care of each other, man. Be good to one another.
Thank you, sir. Showed them at our arrangement straight. Devin Tate, you're going to be leaving for a week, and then you're going to be coming back. What have you got to say for yourself so that we'll remember you for 2 weeks?
I'm just excited to see what the next week's going to hold. I've never been anywhere in that part of the world, so looking forward to going to Japan, and hopefully I'll have some cool stories to tell you guys about when I come back.
Awesome.
Great.
Can't wait.
Great.
And we hope you can call in next week. Thank you for bringing Jonathan.
Yeah,
on.
I hope so.
Oh, it was wonderful. We love our show. We'll be back next week. Just see what's going on. Actually, next week we have knowledge of Israel Petty. Get him through his cousin Ed Strain. He has a lizard man story in one of my books. So listen, you guys just stay tuned. We'll have Israel next week. It'll be the week of Thanksgiving. The next week, we have, of course, Jen Cruz of the Sea Squatchers. We cannot wait. Woo! I'm not Ron Burgundy.
Hello?
Hello? Did we lose him?